Hey, Real Talk podcast listeners, political correctness is killing comedy. So says one of the all-time greats, Jerry Seinfeld, in an interview you've probably heard about with The New Yorker. Is he right? We asked Charles Adler and our live audience. I like what they had going on in the chat on this one. Let us know what you think after you've heard us out to talk at ryanjesperson.com. We also talked to Chuck about South Dakota's governor, Kristi Noem, saying that she met with Kim Jong-un, or did she twist it up like a pretzel about that passage in her new book? Plus, Alberta's premier, Danielle Smith, seems to be caught in a bit of a fib about that renewables moratorium. Later in the episode, in the back half, we connect with Jason Leslie at the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. Was he as surprised, no, blown away as we were by that opinion piece Pierre Poilievre wrote in the National Post, where the supposedly open for business, small government, no red tape conservative leader tells Canadian business owners to cancel their chamber memberships? We talk about corporate taxes. We talk about sky-high electricity, how that's killing business. And then a fantastic submission for Positive Reflections presented by Kubi Renewable Energy from an 11-year-old member of our audience, Brady, who says they don't miss an episode. We love to hear it.
This is a Relay Project. Real Talk starts right now. Here's Ryan Jesperson.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the show. Coming up in just a second, Charles Adler on a million different things, it feels like. I'm going to ask him about South Dakota's Governor Kristi Noem. We're getting deeper into the book. Well, I'm not actually reading the book. I'm just enjoying the interviews that she's doing about her book. You remember, we talked to Charles about the, this seems too early in the episode, Johnny, especially recording this on a Monday, for this to be coming out of my mouth, talking about executing puppies in gravel pits. Mm. It seems like in the first 45 seconds, that's a little early for that. Rolling in a little hot right now. My apologies. I hope you had a great weekend. It's nice to see you again.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's nice to have you here with us. Friends are going to be gathering here on the show together. But Kristi Noem writing about putting her dog down. You remember that? Everybody was shocked, or at least some people. We had that kind of different urban-rural thing going on, but we also heard from a bunch of farmers who wrote in, people that work in ag every single day, and said, yeah, that's still not normal behavior. That's not exactly how we do it. We definitely wouldn't write about it. So we'll take your point there. Well, now she's talking about her meetings with the North Korean leader, and it's got her all twisted up into knots. And I saw it, and I just thought, we got to follow up on this with Charles. Plus, we'll go a little closer to home on the political stories. Alberta's premier appears to be caught in a lie when it comes to the Alberta electricity, the system operator, the AESO. Remember that renewables ban? And she said they asked for it. Now they're saying, you know, documents, result of a FOIP request, a Freedom of Information request, show that, in fact, that's not true at all. In fact, it's kind of quite the opposite. And big surprise, had an impact on investment in the province, just like everybody with half a brain suggested that it would when we were talking about this story about 8 months ago. I also want to ask Charles, did you see this story? You saw this story in The New Yorker, the Seinfeld interview, where Jerry Seinfeld says basically the extreme left is ruining comedy, says that people can't joke about anything anymore. Any initial thoughts on the comments from arguably the most successful comedian of all time?
No, I mean, he's been saying this for a while. I mean, he's been saying this for like 10 years. He stopped doing college campuses because they're too... He didn't say the word woke. I like how Jerry, like, he's the everyman. He doesn't want to piss off
doesn't
anyone.
Want to offend anybody.
So he doesn't say woke, but he just says, you know, he doesn't want to go out there because, you know, some opinions are too kind of narrow these days. So when I saw this, I wasn't very surprised.
Yeah, he says in that New Yorker interview, and we'll play a clip of it, but he says he wouldn't be able to do a lot of the jokes from Seinfeld today. One example that he gives, he says, like, if Kramer decides to start a business of having homeless people pull rickshaws, because as Kramer says, well, they're outside anyway. Seinfeld says, you think I could get that episode on the air today? I would say probably not.
No.
I don't think so. So there's an example. Now, a lot of you will probably say, well, yeah, times change. Things change. Sensitivities change. Awareness changes. Empathy evolves. We'll see what Charles has to say about that. Plus, it is the first Monday of the month, the day that we're recording this, which means our friends at the Alberta Chambers of Commerce will join us for an Eye on Alberta Business. We're going to talk about taxes. I want to ask, Jason Leslie is going to be joining us from the Alberta Chambers. I want to ask him about this Pierre Poilievre op-ed. Did you guys see this in the National Post just a few days ago, published on May 3rd? Pierre Poilievre's memo to corporate Canada, basically fire your lobbyists, ignore politicians, go to the people, kind of calling out chambers of commerce across the country. So we'll ask Jason what he thinks about that. Plus, we'll talk about the small business or, you know, corporate taxes, all the kind of stuff that's going to impact business bottom lines. If you're a decision maker, you do not want to be missing this segment presented by Alberta Chambers of Commerce. And of course, we'll wrap up today's episode. This is a special submission from Brady, who's 11 years old, and Brady and his parents check out every week on Real Talk. We love hearing this, presented by our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy, Positive Reflections. And Brady submitted a video, and we absolutely love it. So Brady, you are going to be featured in Positive Reflections coming up. This episode of Real Talk is happening with the support of Alberta's top real estate school. That's Relo, online at relo.ca. Better real estate training starts with Relo. What's so special about Relo? Online delivery, number one, which means it's going to work for you wherever and whenever. They've got experienced instructors interested in your success. And so the relationship starts as they're getting you prepped for your exam. You're getting certified. You get that license so you can practice real estate in the province of Alberta. And then they're going to help you as you launch your business with great tips and tricks. Pretty soon, you realize as you're helping people buy or sell properties that you are finding fulfillment in your job, unlimited earning potential, and you're not stuck in a cubicle. A great deal for you right now because you're hearing about this or seeing it on Real Talk with the special discount code Ryan100 at Relo.ca. You're going to knock $100 off your Alberta residential real estate bundle and the Alberta commercial real estate bundle. A double whammy with the promo code Ryan100 at Relo.ca. Well, the first episode of every week, our good friend, the Emmy Award-winning, legendary RTDNA Lifetime Achievement Award-winning talk show host Charles Adler joins us. And Chuck, this is a first, however. This is the first episode in Real Talk history that Charles Adler on Real Talk is presented by our friends at Tice Automotive Consulting. Charles Adler presented by Tice Automotive Consulting right here on Real Talk. Welcome to the show, pal. It's good to see your face.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Tice. And Tice, good move. Smart investment. Best investment you've ever made.
Yeah, that's what we told him. He says, we love Adler. He says, we love the segments. They listen to Real Talk all the time. And I'm going to be telling you a little bit more about what Tice is all about. Tice is, in my mind, a brilliant business model designed for people that need a vehicle, that are on a budget, that pretty much know what they're looking for, but either don't have the time to go find it or can't stand walking into car dealerships. That's what Tice is all about. And so we'll have more details on that coming up in just a little bit. You and I chatted about Governor Kristi Noem's book last time we talked, but further detail, the book hadn't been released, to be honest. People, you know, some reviewers from, you know, international magazines and the like had received copies of it, but it hadn't been available to the general public. She's now done an interview with Margaret Brennan about a passage in the book about her meeting with Kim Jong-un, North Korean leader. Before we get your take on it, Charles, let's roll it so everybody that hasn't heard the interview yet knows what we're talking about. Here it is.
So you write about lessons learned in leadership, and you bring up some specific incidents I want to ask you about. You talk about meeting some world leaders and one specific one. Quote, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I've been a children's pastor, after all. Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage. And I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
You know, I've met with many, many world leaders, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book about my time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted. So the book is not released until Tuesday. And so we're doing all that we can to make sure that those changes changes are made, and I'm going to continue to focus on what this book is and the blueprint that it lays out for the American citizen on all of the things in the background and stories of my life, but also what I think that needs to be identified in politics and what's broken today. I talk about how broken the money game is, how broken it is that we've got consultants that are getting rich off of elected officials, and then how fake some elected politicians are. Every single person in this country wants someone in elected office that's a human being that doesn't say they're perfect. I take responsibility for that being in the book, and as soon as it was brought to my attention, I asked for it to be changed. So I'm glad that the release date is in a couple of days, and we're excited to talk to America about my new book, No Going Back.
Okay. This is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. writes about it, or I mean, did she? Who knows who wrote the book? Narrates the book herself, by the way. So talks about the story again. And then now will not confirm nor deny that she met the dictator in North Korea and requests no, or insists no further comment.
Before I do anything else, I just want to say that when Kristi Noem compares the little dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, okay? She compares Kim Jong-un to the people that she worked with when she was a children's pastor. That at that time she was working with little dictators. Presumably, Kristi Noem is comparing someone who slaughters his own people, never mind imprisons them, because basically North Korea is a concentration camp. So she's comparing the commandant of the concentration camp called North Korea to little children at church.
Yeah. I'm starting to, I mean, it's slowly washing upon us, though, as she says all this and we're talking about it again, and she repeats the title of her book, No Going Back, and I just did it again, that millions of people are going to buy it and everybody's talking about it, and in a competitive publishing world and a competitive media world and in a competitive political world, she who wants to be the vice presidential nominee, the Republican running mate of Donald Trump, crazy like a fox.
Look, serial liars get rewarded. Sometimes they get rewarded in business. Sometimes they get rewarded as union leaders. Sometimes as media leaders. Sometimes as authors. And yes, sometimes as politicians. And Kristi Noem looks Margaret Brennan of CBS Face the Nation in the eye and says, I'm not going to talk about specific leaders I've met with. But you, Kristi Noem, talked about it. You narrated the book. You talked about meeting a specific leader called Kim Jong-un. And now you're telling us that has to be edited from the book because it's not true. It's not true because you're not telling the truth, Kristi Noem. Why do you insist on lying to your readers?
Tony asking the tough and important question in the YouTube live chat this morning, which is why are there two Dakotas anyway? Which is a great question from Tony. We can solve some of the, you know, we'll solve some things with Adler on Real Talk, but not all of them. What do you make of this Axios? Did you see this Axios polling? It shows 6% of six states. They're talking about swing states that are expected to decide the presidential election coming up in November of this year. Pretty wild, man. We're talking about a tight race to state the obvious. Well,
I've been saying this for a while on Real Talk, and because it's real and it's really true. 90% of ridings in Canada are decided. People vote the way they have voted in the past. People vote because of their religion, their education, their tribe, you know, whatever it is. People are predictable 90% of the time. Some aren't in some ridings, and we don't call them ridings, but we call them districts, and we call them states, and their swing states, and you know, Nevada isn't as predictable, and Pennsylvania and Michigan and North Carolina and a handful of others aren't as predictable. But out of 50 states, never mind all the territories, including my favorite, Guam, out of the 50 U.S. states, only six are swing states. Only 6% of the American public is actually going to be focused on by the professionals like a laser, because 6% of the United States is going to make a decision on whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump in November.
Pretty interesting. You might even call it explosive report by Drew Anderson at the Narwhal, bringing our attention closer to Alberta politics. A senior Alberta official found the renewables pause, which we talked about a lot on the show. Remember this? It was about a 7-month pause on big wind and solar expansion projects in the province of Alberta. The provincial line on this, and we talked to ministers, talked to the premier about this, was basically they didn't want it to be the Wild West. They had recognized some issues with the way that oil and gas, in particular environmental liabilities, had been managed in the province. So they said that they're not going to make the same mistake with renewables. So they hit pause on it for quite some time. It's been estimated that it cost the province billions of dollars in investment, obviously had employment implications, but internal emails acquired through Freedom of Information request by the Narwhal show that the head of the AESO, the Alberta Electric System Operator, was not comfortable with the government's plan to pause renewables. Now, regular viewers, listeners of Real Talk will remember that the premier said that the head of the AESO was a among those who actually requested the pause. And so she was asked about this. This is just a short time ago, and here's what the premier had to say.
The Alberta Electric System Operator asked for us to do a pause to make sure that we could address issues of stability of the grid. The Alberta Utilities Commission asked us to do a pause while we figured out how we could deal with end-of-life reclamation. And the Rural Municipalities Association passed a motion asking for us to make sure that we're not building solar and wind on prime agriculture land. So I would just encourage you to dig up that original press release that we put out and look at what the two regulators have asked us to do. And we have to take that seriously as a government. When our regulators are telling us that we are adding in an unsustainable way and that we have to take a pause, we have to take a pause. There's no two ways about it.
She goes on to explain how she said when she was basically in a room, she asked or suggested a couple of things and some people nodded, and that's kind of where she took her cue. So it's kind of like a soft walk back of this. Now, in the grand, big, swirling, ever-changing news cycle, I don't know how big of a deal this is or how surprised some people would be at this, but it's pretty significant if you actually think about it.
So that fib, let's just call it a fib, okay, for now. That fib isn't as entertaining as Kristi Noem's fib about Kim Jong-un and children being dictators, and she was a children's pastor, and that's kind of similar to meeting Kim Jong-un of North Korea. So Danielle Smith isn't as graphic, isn't as entertaining. But both stories fail the important test of humanity, and that's honesty. And it's clear that the AESO was gritting their teeth and going along with their business about pausing renewables. Can you find an electrification outlet anywhere? Can you find anyone in charge of power that doesn't want to have access to as many kinds of power as possible? Because you never know when the stuff is going to hit the fan. You want more, not less. So the business about the pause, it doesn't add up. And it doesn't add up for business in Alberta. And if the Conservative Party is not about business, what the hell is it about?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the business angle on this is pretty interesting. So Mike Law, and again, I'm referencing reporting at the Narwhal.ca, president and CEO of Alberta's independent electricity grid operator, pressured to support the province on this. So he speaks out. He says that the organization is there overseeing the electricity grid, opposed to this moratorium, as you might imagine, on new renewable projects, said he was, quote, not comfortable supporting the decision, but told by his government-appointed board chair to support the minister without reservation. He went on to say basically that the AESO asked for us to do a pause to make sure we could address issues of stability of the grid. And the premier's talked about that when pressed by reporters, said the desire to halt this new project pipeline is a very troubling message for me, something we need to provide good messaging against when we have the opportunity. Messaging to the government, said that basically it would be send a closed for business message. Okay, this is from the president and CEO of the Alberta Electric Systems Operator, a closed for business message, and would be reputationally very challenging. Goes on to say, this is by way of a Freedom of Information request, on the record, quote, if we make ourselves unwelcoming, investment will just go elsewhere. That's pretty direct in his feeling on this. But then you've got the chair, as mentioned, Carl Johansson, who was appointed to the role in 2020. Said basically, I would be careful, this to the, from the chair to the CEO, okay? I would be careful with your messaging on this. This may be a way for the minister to show action. If he goes this way, we're better off to have a say in the process rather than let the AUC, the Alberta Utility Commission, have sole reign. I agree it can be a burden, but it's better than inaction. I would be careful with your messaging on this. So it shines or provides some insight for the general public by way of this long form journalism to better understand what's motivating the decision, but also what was not a consideration in the decision, which was something that could be reputationally very challenging and very damaging to investment in the province, which, sending a closed for business message. I think of premiers. I haven't seen Danielle Smith with this photo op. I think of Doug Ford for sure. But how many politicians have stood in front of the open for business sign? Like, Alberta is calling. Ontario's open for business. Closed for business is an entirely different take.
Well, I mean, look, if you're a conservative, your job is to say that you're always open for business. Look at how we treated our new client this morning, right? We're open for business. We love the idea that we got this new client, and we're going to do whatever we can to make sure the client is as successful as possible, because that's what we do, and that's what pro-business people do. We understand that business is the cradle of opportunity. We want as many people in Alberta to have as much opportunity as possible. So if you're a conservative, you argue for business, okay? I'll use a word that Danielle Smith is familiar with, lobby. When you're a conservative, you lobby for business. But of course, Alberta needs not a lobbyist for oil and gas. They need a lobbyist for the entire province. But if you're conservative, you argue it's the NDP that stops business. It's the NDP that throws up roadblocks. It's the NDP that turns business into roadkill. That's what you argue when you're a conservative. Does anybody on God's green earth believe that Rachel Notley would have put a roadblock up to renewables?
In just a second, I want to ask you about this Seinfeld interview with The New Yorker. I'm just curious for your take on it. I like that he said it. It's definitely pissing some people off. And the whole point of him making the comment was that he doesn't care if it pisses people off. And Seinfeld definitely in a position where he doesn't necessarily have to care what people think about what he thinks, but he was happy to go on the record. So we'll put that in front of Real Talkers in just a quick second. As mentioned, moving forward, Charles Adler is presented weekly on Real Talk by our friends at Tice Automotive Consulting. You can find out more about what they do at TiceAutomotive.com. Buying a vehicle should be fun, and Tice can make that happen. But if you're the type of person, you need like an SUV, maybe you're looking to size down, maybe you're looking to get into an EV, whatever it is, whatever your budget is, Tice makes buying a new or used vehicle easy. They fill in the gaps that make the buying experience stressful, and they transform it into one that's worry-free and even fun. If you're working downtown, if you're a single parent, if you're a young professional, if you're going to school, whatever it is, if your schedule doesn't allow you to scroll around on Facebook Marketplace or Kijiji, let alone visit dealerships, all it takes is a quick call, maybe an email exchange, whatever you like, with the team at Tice. You let them know what you're looking for, you let them know your budget, and then they go find it for you. Not only that, they have white glove service. They'll deliver the car to you no matter what you're looking for, whatever your budget. You're going to be dealing with Chris, and he'll help you find it for a very reasonable fee. I love how they've structured the business. Flat rate fees depending on the vehicle purchase. Plus, they have a concierge service. They can look after your maintenance through the year. They've thought it through from start to finish. You can check them out again at TiceAutomotive.com. Our friends at Friesen Brothers have you covered as Mother's Day is approaching. Want to make sure this is on your radar, everybody. Coming up this weekend, how are you telling mom how much you appreciate her? Catering by Friesen has you covered. If you go to their website, that's cateringbyfriesen.com, or link to it off their main page at friesen.com, you'll find wonderful options for a custom charcuterie box for mom. For just $90, they're going to give you the absolute best of Alberta meats, Alberta cheeses, and all the accoutrements. It's a great way to treat mom for all the things she does and spend time with her and really great food. You can order your Friesen Brothers Mother's Day charcuterie box today at cateringbyfriesen.com and pick it up at any of their 17 Alberta locations. And this episode is receiving support from our friends at California Closets, who want to remind you that the team that's ready to talk to you, their team of designers, are available for a consultation that is absolutely free. They can talk to you about the custom closets and storage solutions they've designed for thousands of families that are finding The project was a perfect fit for their space, for their needs, and of course, for their budget. Whether it's an entertainment center, whether it's a laundry room, a secondary bedroom, a home office, or even your garage, California Closets has you covered at californiaclosets.ca. I love this from... Hey, by the way, we wanted to, I meant to do some research, Johnny. I think I had to, was it Pokemon? Alberta, remember I was calling him Alberta Ginger in the chat, and they said, Jespo obviously doesn't know Pokemon. Was it, I think it's Gengar, Alberta Gengar. I hope I've pronounced that correctly, but in the chat says, I can't wait to hear more about Tice Automotive Consultants. They say, I'm looking for a summer beater, but walking into a dealership instantly makes me pissed off. Alberta Gengar, you are the target customer for Tice Automotive Consulting. So best of luck. Make sure you let them know that Real Talk sent you. Hey, so Chuck, Jerry Seinfeld does this interview with The New Yorker, obviously to promote his new film, which is a kind of a super fun take on the 1960s cereal wars between Kellogg's and Post. But as The New Yorker does very well, they start digging into bigger issues, bigger thoughts around comedy, and Seinfeld starts talking about how the craft, the art, has come under attack, so to speak, by the extreme left. Here he is.
It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. When you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke. Well, that's the end of your comedy. They move the gates like in skiing. Yeah. Culture, the gates are moving. Your job is to be agile and clever enough that wherever they put the gates, I'm going to make the gate.
All right. So we wanted to share that. That shared by The New Yorker. Your thoughts on what Seinfeld had to say.
There is no subject that you've brought up on this show today and perhaps this year than this one. It's not about Seinfeld. It's not about political correctness. Not about woke, 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 woke. Okay. It's about humor. Okay. Humor is the great lubricant of life. You check out your life and you think about all the people in your life that really matter to you, the people who really inspire you, the people who put more spring in your step, put a song in your heart. Every one of them has one thing in common. They have a great sense of humor. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean that they're just funny. Funny isn't enough. It means that they don't take themselves seriously. So you can actually communicate with them. And you don't have to worry about making a mistake, whether it's a mistake about race or ethnicity or all the favorite topics that the wokers and jokers like to talk about, okay? It means that you can actually communicate on the same level as the other person. It means that you can have empathy for them, and most important, they have empathy for you. People with no sense of humor are under suspicion, as far as I'm concerned. Anybody I've ever interviewed who was any good, it didn't matter whether they were from the arts or politics, economics, universities, unions, it didn't matter. If they lacked a sense of humor, something was wrong. And I was unable to connect with them as much as I could with a person who had a sense of humor. If we trash humor, we're lost. We're absolutely lost. And it'll be very difficult to find a flashlight. Humor matters. And what Jerry Seinfeld is saying is extremely important.
Yeah. I was curious to see how this would land in the live chat. So I've just been watching that as you've been talking. Travis says, listen to the shows, though, that Seinfeld's referencing. They were like extremely leftist critiques in the day. Jerry doesn't even understand that, says Travis. Sylvia says, Seinfeld, the old white guy who wants to go back to the past. Tony says, F off, Jerry. There's a ton of comedy that's way funnier than your show of 20 years ago. I disagree, Tony, but you're entitled to your opinion. Travis says, in all caps, comedy isn't suffering. Jordan says Seinfeld is irrelevant today. That is absolutely not true. Garth says he agrees 100% with Seinfeld. I don't know. Sylvia says guys can make comedy great by making fun of themselves. Kenzie says it's totally about political correctness these days. And then some people are just talking about how programming has changed and that's had an impact on it as well. I think that there has been like certainly a trend. Now you do have to acknowledge there's more awareness now around kind of punching down. And people, I think of like Dave Chappelle as a classic example, and how Chappelle has kind of dug in on trans issues in his comedy. But I think also if you like, and again, I'm an outsider on this. People aren't gonna like, I have no lived experience. I've not walked any miles. This is my personal impression of it. But I don't pick up on malice on a lot of the stand-up comedy that I see getting called out these days. I think that a lot of stand-up that gets called out these days makes people uncomfortable. I think malicious is different. I think, like, you know, inciting hate or inciting violence is obviously, hate speech is totally a different thing. But I think these days people are uncomfortable with being made to feel uncomfortable, and that's always been a hallmark of really great comedy.
When we watched Mary Tyler Moore, All in the Family, and yes, naturally, I'm going to include Seinfeld and Friends and Cheers. I mean, people can bark about left-wing comedy, right-wing comedy. It always sounds like a desperate small-time talk show host when someone says, Mary Tyler Moore, left-wing messaging. Get out of my face. You're an idiot. You're a clown. You're a moron. Okay? I'm not trying to be cruel, but you're being cruel to humanity when you say that Mary Tyler Moore and all these other shows were all about, you know, trying to make America or trying to make the world more left-wing. Here's the deal. When all of us, and I mean all of us, were watching those shows, we had something in common, okay? And there was something that we talked about the following day. We talked about the laughs we got at Cheers. What's wrong? What's wrong with humor uniting society? We are divided in so many ways. The word polarization is used all the time. Left versus right, two Americas, two Canadas, broken Canada, fixed Canada, blah, 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 blah. Humor is the lubricant. Humor is what keeps us going. And if all of us had a particular show, okay, that was a benchmark for us, that allowed us to laugh, yes, at ourselves, that would be a good thing.
You can catch Charles Adler every single week, kicking us off episode one of every week, right here exclusively on Real Talk, courtesy of Tice Automotive Consulting. We'll talk to you again soon, pal. Good to see your face.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Alberta. And thank you, Tice.
You got it. Coming up in just a moment, hang on a second. Let me jump back. I'm sure there's more in the live chat here, right? Like Travis says, how can you make the argument you can't make jokes anymore when there's a lot of mainstream shows like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? When's the last time It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia recorded? Is that still going on, as far as you know? Have you seen that? I mean, I know that it's a great show. I can't
Pretty
say I'm
sure
super
it's
familiar.
Done.
Is it? Yeah, I think it's like, didn't that start like 20 years ago? I watched like half of season one of It's Always Sunny, because that's, I've been trying to find a new show to start with at the very beginning and run all the way through. I decided on The Sopranos, by the way, so I'm like five or six episodes
great.
In, never
yeah,
watched The
show.
Sopranos. But It's Always Sunny, the episode, or you know, season one looks like it was shot on a camcorder. So that, I think that was done like 20, 25 years ago.
2005.
Okay. Yeah, so like before Facebook existed, before the iPhone existed, right? Pretty much.
Yeah.
People are saying, Ryan, Kenzie says, Ryan, you thought the Picton t-shirts were hate speech. What the fuck? The Picton t-shirts? That was the Danger Cats comedy troupe. First of all, I didn't say hate speech, but like they're in horrific taste. They're absolutely brutal. Making fun of and monetizing the murder of prostitutes. That's, I don't think, what we're talking about here. I don't think that's what Jerry Seinfeld's talking about. But I appreciate you listening to enough episodes that you remember us having that conversation.
Always Sunny, still on the air. Go
is it real? Really?
Well, not confirmed, but season 17 might.
Wow,
might happen, yeah.
That's impressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if it's still the same. It's got to be. Is Danny DeVito still? I got to get into that show.
It actually is when it premiered. Or sorry, with the 15th season, it became the longest running live action American sitcom of all time.
Wow, yeah. Amazing. Michael says, "Well, what about Family Guy? You know how that show has never been taken to court in the day and age of cancel culture? Quite surprising." Yeah, okay, Family Guy. Yeah, I mean, there have certainly been, like, what about South Park? Alberta Girl says, Seinfeld is from the generation being accused with Me Too, sexual harassment, the Boys Club, and their perspective based on power. Humor should not be about power. That from Alberta Girl. That's an interesting comment. Humor should not be about power. That's kind of, you know, centering back or bringing it back to the punching down thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment from Alberta Girl. Thanks for throwing that into the chat. Joe says, Jay Leno has said, when times change and the taste in humor changes, then it's up to comedians to write different jokes. Yeah. Who's calling the shots on humor? Who needs to? What role does stand-up comedy need to play? I don't know. I mean, George Carlin stands up today I mean, I guess depending on who you talk to, you listen to some of Eddie Murphy's stuff and it's like, ooh, like Eddie Murphy raw.
Yeah.
Now, like, I don't think you could, I mean, I guess you could do it. I don't know how it would land. A lot of the stuff is like, I listened to a little bit of it maybe about a year ago and I was like, wow. I mean, it's like super homophobic. And I think it's just like, there's a lot of language. Even if you look back to, like, you know, movies that were big for, I mean, my vintage, I'm just turned 47. So like the 77 Bournes, but you know, our era of, let's say, like 35 to 60 or 35 to 55, like the movies that we thought were funny, like all the Adam Sandler movies. You go back and, and some of the like innuendo or some of the jokes in those even doesn't really stand up 15, 20 years later. Yeah. It's like, ooh.
This was all before like on-demand internet porn too. So every movie, remember like especially the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, everything was over-sexualized. It was always like guy movies of them spying on the neighbor in the shower and then just lightly, like almost rape culture stuff is in there. I know what you're saying. I watch them back nowadays and I'm like, how did this ever pass back in the day, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Alberta Rancher says, I guess people would just rather watch like Big Brother and shows where you like cheat and do backhanded things and carry on like there are no rules. Yeah, who knows? But definitely, you know, audience has changed for sure.
TV is great though.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. Yeah. Garth goes on to say people are fragile today. You know, you're only allowed to make jokes about straight white men and nobody else. Justin says after a certain level of success, it seems like comedians are like completely disconnected from their audience and their comedy just ends up being about how aggrieved or aggrieved they are. Yeah, I do agree with that.
I think it's funny, like all these millionaires talking about, you know, this really bothers me today. I'm like, if I had all your money, nothing would bother me. I'd be on an island. What are you even talking about? But yeah, it has turned into, especially the big comedians. We're talking about like Dave Chappelle, who's the guy who hosted the Golden Globes or whatever forever. You love him. Ricky Gervais. Their comedy has just turned into them bitching that they can't do their comedy, which is kind of like, I'm like, okay, I get it. But like you're doing it right now.
You're doing it right now and getting paid handsomely for it. Gilles says comedy is a product. If people don't find it funny any longer, they won't purchase it. You can't complain when your product is no longer desirable. You have to evolve when societal trends change. Meantime, Noob Try Again jumps in and says, South Park is clever humor, though they always have, and it 100% is, they always have two storylines going on at once. Usually there's subtext commenting on society. Says, I hated it at first, but I really appreciate it now. You can send us a note, talk@ryanjustin.com. Maybe this is a great submission for the flamethrower Fridays on Real Talk, which is going to be on Wednesday, by the way, this week. It's a short week for us here on Real Talk. Wednesday will be our final episode of the week, and then we're going to bring you a couple special edition episodes Thursday and Friday. But the flamethrower will be on Wednesday this week. So if you got something you got to get off your chest, courtesy of our friends at the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park, send that to us in email form at talk@ryanjesperson.com. Coming up in just a second, we're going to put an eye on Alberta business. Well, as a matter of fact, Jason Leslie's got his eye on Alberta business with the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. But before he does, if you missed our most recent Real Talk roundtable, we were hanging out with three filmmakers, matter of fact, four, when we had one join us from California to talk about his film, Ben talking about the cigarette surfboard. But an in-studio roundtable leading up to Northwest Fest, which is Canada's longest-running documentary film festival. And I wanted to put this in front of your radar. Now, this festival kicks off May 9th. They've got about 20 films, all nonfiction, documentaries, basically. You're bound to find one that will grab your attention, grab your interest, and not let go. But we here at Real Talk are proud to support Northwest Fest for the exact reason that the festival director, Guy Lavallee, identified on our Friday episode, on our Real Talk Roundtable. Fascinating stuff on how COVID and the introduction of Tiger King, one of the most popular, one of the most watched documentaries of all time, actually kind of hurt documentary film festivals.
When the pandemic hit in March of 2020, it was the perfect storm because that's right when Netflix released Tiger King. Mm. And everybody was stuck at home and everybody watched Tiger King. And then suddenly their algorithm was, you might also like, and it was filled with documentaries. So suddenly everyone was at home realizing, oh my God, I can watch all these documentaries at home. I had no idea there were so many. So you would think, oh, that that increase people's interest in docs, which it did, but it also increased their interest in staying home and watching them on TV. What we really need also is for people to come and see the films at the theater. It supports the festival. It supports the Metro Cinema, which is the only art house independent theater left in this city.
And the way you should watch a movie.
It is the way
you
should watch a movie.
You come in and the curtain opens and then you see it. It's like, it's the perfect
You have the best
cook-in.
Popcorn.
The popcorn's so good. They're licensed. You can have a beer in your seat.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing about the film festival is that these are opportunities to see films before they're anywhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes even the only place to see these films.
Exactly.
Like, you know, an independent film hopes to be able to be seen somewhere publicly, but ultimately we're all just trying to find an audience, find people who are interested in the story that we're telling. And so if this is the only place to be able to see it, this isn't something you can pick up on Netflix. You can't wait for, you know, the whatever, Amazon Prime or
That's
whatever
really
to pick
interesting
up this film.
Because I could send you a list, literally. I could probably sit down this weekend and compile a list of great films I've programmed at various festivals over the last 15 years that people loved, right? You saw the audience ratings, like people loved, and never heard from again.
That was from our most recent Real Talk Roundtable. The other two that you were hearing there was Katrina Beatty, who's the producer of The Wounds Within, an endometriosis story. Fascinating stuff. I barely knew anything about that. Learned a lot from the roundtable. Film very well done. And Blake McWilliam, who's the director of Send Kelp. And we all learned how kelp is going to save the world. Wanted to put it on your radar, though, that as Northwest Fest kicks off on May 9th, it debuts with the screening of Common Ground. You can learn more at northwestfest.ca. This is the highly anticipated sequel to the 2020 documentary Kiss the Ground. You'll see Jason Momoa, Rosario Dawson, Laura Dern, Woody Harrelson, star-studded cast, a sweeping and uplifting story of the pioneers of the regenerative movement, who are working tirelessly to bring our planet's entire ecosystem back to life. That's the Alberta premiere of Common Ground, kicking off Northwest Fest. It all starts May 9th. You can learn more at northwestfest.ca. You know, a lot of talk about emissions, environmental responsibility, and the role that Alberta and the oil sands has in that. Have you checked out PathwaysAlliance.ca? This is the six biggest companies in Alberta's oil sands working with two different levels of government. That's the province and, of course, the feds. You heard Randy Boissonneau talking about this last time he was on Real Talk. They're building a large-scale carbon capture and storage network designed to reduce emissions from operations, protect existing jobs, and create new ones. Global energy demands are changing. The world is looking for responsibly produced energy, and it's what Alberta can provide. You can get more details at pathwaysalliance.ca. And this episode of Real Talk is receiving support from Athabasca University. You know, tens of thousands of Canadians are AU alum. And why did they choose Athabasca University? Well, number one, Canada's Open University offers world-class accredited online degrees and courses designed so you can complete your education wherever and whenever it works for you. And with more than 50,000 program and course alumni from over 100 countries, it's hard to believe that more than 94% of them say they're satisfied with the quality of their education. You can learn more about the AU Advantage. Select your path today by visiting athabascau.ca. The first episode of every month, our friends at the Alberta Chambers of Commerce have their eye on Alberta business. This is our way to better understand the politics of business, the business of politics, and how it affects the rest of us. Jason Leslie joining us live in studio with the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. It's nice to see your face.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Ryan.
Yeah, kind of interesting talking to Charles Adler, this revelation over the weekend about what went into or what didn't go into the renewables pause with the Alberta government. And I wanted to ask you this just on the surface level, government messaging or industry messaging, when a government's hanging the open for business sign versus what some experts say comes across perhaps as a closed for business sign, that's something that resonates not just with big wind or solar companies, but I would imagine with business advocacy groups like the Alberta Chambers of Commerce too.
It absolutely does. You know, those kind of signals that business receives when they're hearing from government, how they're speaking about issues, really impacts investment decisions. You know, investment's all about confidence, predictability, certainty. When you're making long-term investments, it's important to understand if the circumstances and the environments are going to be the same today as they are 3 years or 5 years when you're making long-term investment.
I feel like sometimes, especially on the punditry side, we can oversimplify the politics and the politics of business, as you might put it, or the business of politics. And as Charles was just talking about, you can say, well, this party is the pro-business party, and this is the party that business feels like throws hurdles up everywhere. Were you as surprised as I was to see Pierre Poilievre's op-ed in the National Post just a few days ago? The conservatives, I mean, and again, here's where I feel like I might be a little too lazy in my commentary, but Poilievre is supposed to be the pro-business guy. Poilievre is supposed to be the guy saying to business, based on the reputation of political parties, business, we've got your back. Instead, he's telling corporate Canada to fire their lobbyists. He's essentially saying that, in a way, business doesn't have an audience with him and won't if and when he's prime minister. How did it land with you?
Well, I mean, the last part of your statement there is one important thing. When he, you know, forms government, we don't know if he's going to form government. That's a long way out, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is commentary from someone who's elected right now. And obviously, typically, people would perceive that the conservative movement would be more aligned on business policies than other parties. But that's not always the case. Historically, we were pretty surprised. It unfortunately paints chambers and advocates in general with a pretty broad brush. And we're wondering, you know, is that message really what was intended, or maybe there's some other considerations that Mr. Poilievre's looking to achieve with making a statement like this. At the end of the day, at least certainly here in Alberta, our chamber network are huge advocates for business and their communities and the value of business, and we take a lot of action. And if you get into the article, you can see some of those very specific critiques that Mr. Poilievre levies against different advocacy groups. And here in Alberta, you just have to think about our network's vote prosperity campaigns in the last two provincial elections. Like, that was getting the message and importance of business out into communities, engaging candidates about the value of business and why that matters to everybody in the province.
For people that haven't heard it, I want to read some of this because it's wild. This is Pierre Poilievre writing this, okay? So he submits this opinion piece to the National Post. They obviously publish it. So writes the leader of the official opposition, quote, "Recently, the Business Council of Alberta held a big event to suck up to the federal Liberals who have killed two major pipelines, violated the Constitution with their anti-resource law C-69, imposed a hated carbon tax on small business with no rebates for over 5 years now." Obviously, that's changing with the current budget. But he goes on to say all Alberta businesses should cancel their memberships and stop giving money to the Business Council. Small business should stop supporting the CFIB, the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. This is where I went, whoa. He goes on to say sucking up to anti-resource, high tax, big government politicians has and will bring more anti-resource, high tax, big government policies. Goes on, Pierre Poilievre, at the most, in the National Post, he writes, "The Chamber of Commerce, Business Council, and CFIB hold pointless luncheons and meetings and write op-eds or record interviews that almost no one sees. As leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, I refuse to meet the aforementioned groups. They tell me what I already know. I feel like I have, at minimum, 100 personal friends that are proud members of the Alberta Chambers of Commerce, and I can't imagine any one of them being excited about this."
It was an unfortunate piece.
Yeah.
I think that it might have some implications for relationships. Chamber networks work very, very
That's
hard.
That's what I'm wondering about. Like, yeah. Politically, to me, it doesn't make sense for him to write this.
You know, I wouldn't want to speculate on the deep politics and motivations for writing this piece. I think that maybe some of the broader implications weren't considered as much as they perhaps should have been. I know here, as I said before, here in Alberta, our chamber network works very, very hard on behalf of business to work with government, those who are elected, and actually making policy changes to try and advance business interests. And we work really hard to communicate and engage the public with the value of business and why that matters to us all.
It's obvious that you're in the relationship building and relationship maintenance business by how you're approaching and answering this question. If I'm a member of a chamber of commerce, I'm going, what the hell? Like, I understand if Pierre Poilievre says, if you're part of a group that's chaining yourself to old growth trees, or if you're part of a group that's blocking railways, you're not going to get meetings with me. To say it about chambers of commerce, I just went, geez. Let's talk about some of your advocacy. I know that the Alberta Chambers of Commerce just wrote an email, went on the record to the federal finance minister, and you've got some real concerns about the way that, in particular, small businesses are taxed right now. Can you take us into it so the average person can understand it?
Yeah, so with most recent federal budget implemented, there was one of the components of that was to increase the capital gains inclusion rate from 50% to 66%. And now, since that was initially tabled, they've broken this piece out, and it will go forward as its own independent bill. This is a big deal, and it's going to impact more if it goes through than those who are actually being taxed more, because a lot of small businesses or people that structure their earnings through corporate structures, so doctors, for example, a lot of people that are in healthcare services, they create a corporation to manage their earnings because they don't have retirements. That's how they save their earnings, and through those corporations, that's how they're able to provide enough lift in the work that they do to sustain them when they're retired. Small businesses investing in construction, for example, residential construction to meet affordable housing, to meet housing demands, these types of things. If we're disincentivizing the risk-taking and the opportunities of capital gains, there's going to be less investment in these areas, and that can impact Canadians.
I heard from the jobs minister, Randy Boisneau, on this. The prime minister has gone on record talking about it as well, and they're basically saying with the changes to the capital gains tax, they say it's going to impact like 1 out of every 1,000 people. They're saying it's a negligible impact for the people that are collecting, basically who are padding their already deep pockets. What's your membership telling you about that? Or what's your response to that? Let me ask.
Over 22,000 businesses represented by the ACC network here in Alberta. 95% of them are SMEs, small businesses. They don't see it that way. What we're hearing specifically from our members and from a broad section of our members is that this is going to have a lot more implications than what the federal government's communicating about it.
What are you guys doing on utility costs?
Well, this is another really big issue, and I heard you talking with Charles earlier about the overall kind of electricity file. There's a lot going on in this file, and you know, at a broad level, we would say that we're positive and supportive of the government taking action. Electricity is a huge issue, and there's a long-term consequences and implications to be considered about electricity demand growing. But one of the very specific issues that we're having some challenges with is around municipal franchise fees. Now, these are fees that show up on consumers' utility bills. They're called franchise fees. Sometimes they're called local access fees. And a lot of municipalities are increasing these year to year. And there's a huge burden associated with that. These franchise fees are just a consumption tax. That's what they are. They're a consumption tax on either electricity or natural gas. And it's adding a lot of costs both to living in Alberta, but doing business.
Yeah, so I feel like on the electricity file, you can hit it from a number of angles right now. I think it's all over everybody's radar that there could be some grid strain issues and implications as Alberta's population and demand continues to grow. And then you have people, just the everyday folks, everyone can relate to this, or most people anyway, that are looking at their bill going, how am I going to cover this? Or why is this, we've seen numbers. I think it was up 138% on average in Alberta year over year, which is wild. I think it was BC that was number two on the list for the biggest increase at 12%. So we're 10 times number two, to put that into perspective for people on how wild that is. So a number of different angles here, but a lot of people that will take the time to actually look at the bill, their bill, will find that it's not just their usage, right? They're going to find that it is these fees, and a lot of people, I think that's been a big surprise. I see people, this is anecdotal, but I see people commenting about it all the time on social media. For a lot of people, if what they're paying has felt manageable, we, as humans, our attention spans are short and our obligation, the list is long. And so we're not always reading the fine print and sifting through stuff. But when you're trying to problem solve or figure out why something is where it is, and you start digging and start looking at those fees, that's when it's first on your radar. Now, I've understood that there are some changes that have been announced as part of Bill 19, the Utilities Affordability Statutes Amendment Act. that's good news for people in Calgary and maybe not so good news for people outside of Calgary? This is something I know that maybe not everybody's aware of.
Yeah, no, thanks, Ryan, for pointing that out. So the government did take some action to specifically address how these franchise fees are calculated in Calgary, which had a different calculation than the rest of the municipalities that currently levy these types of taxes on consumers. In Calgary specifically, it was tied to the regulated rate option. And so that means as that regulated rate option went up, so did your municipal franchise fees against that rate. And Calgary businesses were just getting smoked. Like it was a massive, massive additional burden over the last couple of years when electricity prices have been extremely high. What we're looking for, and we're very supportive of that. We commend the Alberta government.
You've got members there, obviously.
Absolutely. You know, it impacts competitiveness. It was a huge burden, and we, you know, applaud the provincial government for taking action on that. What we're looking for is similar type of action on what about all the rest of the consumers and small businesses in other municipalities here in Alberta that are also burdened with these types of consumption tax? And so what we're looking for is just greater transparency. You know, the franchise fees, it's actually a consumption tax. Just call it that. Put it on people's bills, municipal consumption tax, and people will start probably paying attention a lot more. And at making sure that municipalities report the revenues that they're you know, collecting through these fees, so that people understand when they're looking at their, you know, looking to hold their governments accountable, looking to understand how they're performing, going to the polls, that they understand what they're doing, the money that they're collecting, and what they're doing with it. And right now, it's a very, very confusing process for people to actually track what these costs are to them, and they're significant.
I'm putting you on the spot. Are there any municipalities that are particularly egregious? Like, is there one or two, like, can you say in the province of Alberta? I don't know why I'm laughing, but like, here are the folks who are having the screws put to them the worst.
You know what? I mean, Calgary was certainly an outlier. It was dramatically more impactful to them, especially the past few years. I would just say, you know, municipalities, we leave that up to our community chambers to take that forward to their communities and to their local municipalities. I will say that our research showing there are a lot of communities that are hiking these municipal franchise fees because people aren't aware of them. So then it becomes an easy tax or revenue source with a little less scrutiny. So it's easier to get by on raising franchise fees than it is to propose a change to an increased property tax.
How would you characterize this provincial government to the Alberta Chambers? Receptive, like open, like are there good channels of communication? Do you feel like you have a voice? How many members did you say? How many member businesses?
Over 22,000.
22,000, that's remarkable. Do those 22,000 businesses have the ear of the province?
You know what, this government has been very receptive to working with the Chamber of Commerce Network. They're strongly supportive of small business and business overall. And so we've had good relationships and they are receptive to when we bring forward issues.
That's good to hear. Big news for a lot of people, finalists announced just right before basically you and I are talking for the Alberta Business Awards of Distinction. These are some of the greatest and most noteworthy achievers in business in this province. You can check out abbusinessawards.com. We'll link to it in the show notes on the podcast or on YouTube. Submissions up significantly year over year from the year prior. What does that tell you?
It's, you know, this is always one of the brightest spots of the year, and to see that growth is just absolutely incredible. It means businesses are succeeding. They're looking to get engaged and to tell their stories, and we are always just so pleased to host this event every year. It's just so inspiring to hear the incredible stories of business success around the province.
Yeah, I love to see it. Again, abbusinessawards.com, that's where people can get their tickets too. It's always such a fun event out at EIA. This is going May 30th, and you can still get tickets. Tickets available online until May 30th, but the event Thursday, June 20th. At the Renaissance Edmonton Airport Hotel. I can't ask you about a business that really jumps out at you or that's recognition worthy because you're not going to pick favorites. You're not going to tell me that, are you?
No sneak peeks on this one. But no, let me tell you, there's just an incredible slate of businesses that are doing incredible things in their communities, for their employees, for their partners, just showcasing just the amazing community of business we have here in the province.
Why is it so important to have events like this?
You know, we just got to look at the last few years where business really struggled. I mean, yeah. We all struggled. Business really, really struggled. And everyone benefits and does well when they get a little bit of recognition for the hard work and contributions they're making. And this is one of those events that we're not talking politics, we're not talking policy, we're just celebrating the success of business.
It's awesome. Yeah, for a lot of people, it'll be like record growth, record profits. And for a lot of other people in the room, it's just like you kept your head above water through some of the most significant challenges that your business has probably ever seen, right?
And you're innovating and you're coming up with just incredibly impactful opportunities for your customers in your communities. This is all, you know, so many of these businesses are giving significantly back in their communities and they care about their staff and they're trying to make great, fantastic workplaces.
Yeah, I love it. I want to, before we go, I always love to give a shout out to Red Deer. Spent some great couple of years of my life in Red Deer. That's where my career launched. And it is hard to believe I double checked this. The Red Deer Chamber of Commerce is getting set to celebrate its 100th. Is this right?
Absolutely.
130th anniversary?
There are, you know, dozens of chambers in the province that have been around way
That's
more than 100
incredible,
years.
Man.
Longer than Alberta was a province.
Longer than Alberta's a province.
Yes. Yes.
Unbelievable. And so the Alberta Chamber's AGM and your policy plenary, which goes May 23rd to 25th, and people can sign up to become a member if they're not already, right?
Absolutely.
If you want to like mix and mingle and surround yourself with and learn from and benefit from and maybe even, you know, shake some hands, do some business. I don't know.
There
you
we
know,
go.
Check
there
out abchamber.ca to learn more about this, the AGM coming up May 23rd to 25th. But yeah, I was blown away. 130 years, the Red Deer Chamber.
Yeah. And then on Saturday evening, you know, we're going to be hosting the premier. We're so thrilled she's going to be coming to the gala dinner where the Red Deer Chamber is also going to be recognizing, celebrating members. They have, you know, numerous members, more than 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, like a room full of them. So we're going to be celebrating the success of business in Red Deer and looking forward to it.
Do you know how many businesses would have been there since inception? How many 130-year-old businesses there would be? I'd be curious to know. There's got to be at least one.
You know what you think? You would think so. We've been digging through the records.
Wonder.
It's a long, you know.
That's wild. Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, like you said, older than Alberta. And so you go into this. I'll be curious to see the reception. Premier gets there. People are going to come. She's just forecasted Red Deer as Alberta's next city of 1 million people. People in Red Deer right now are going, okay,
yeah.
Okay. Like, if I'm the mayor of Red Deer, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, we'll see how that goes.
Growth is knocking
in Red Deer. So at the AGM, what can people expect, though? Obviously, you're going to have a whole bunch of new policy, this policy plenary, so people can kind of sink their teeth into that. Is there like a general theme or anything in particular that you want people to know about what's coming up at the AGM?
Yeah, it's really about making the business environment here more friendly and allowing businesses to scale up. So, you know, looking at ways to streamline opportunities to do business, grow business, start businesses. You know, those are the kind of issues that come up. There's a wide range of them, and we look forward to advocating the new slate of policies coming.
Okay, cool. And then later this month, you guys are rolling out your next annual or your provincial priorities survey, which is a great way for members of yours to have their say.
Absolutely. So, you know, we'll share that link with you. You can get it out to your listeners.
You bet.
Ryan, and we really appreciate you always doing that. It's a great channel for businesses to articulate, you know, what their priorities are for the province and just for people's awareness. You know, we also on this annual survey do a full public survey as well. So it's statistically relevant. And we do that so that we can understand and learn what the priorities of the public are, how those align with business. And if there's gaps on important issues, it gives us insight as a community and as a chamber network, how we can provide education to close those gaps.
All right, good stuff. That's Jason Leslie joining us from the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. You can learn more about what they do by visiting abchamber.ca, Alberta Chambers of Commerce, where members matter and benefits count. We'll put those links so they're easy for you to find in the show notes on podcasts and on YouTube. Thanks for hanging out with us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Hey, you want to have your heart full? You want to see a beautiful story submitted to us by an 11-year-old audience member?
Oh, I'd love
that. Okay, don't go anywhere. That's coming up in 30 seconds. Before we get there, I wanted to let you know, of course, that our friends at Complete Care Restoration, incredible partners of the show, and we love that email. I read it to you last week from Neil, who let us know that at his small business, they had a big freezer unit just, I don't know what happened. The gremlins got into it, and it started creating moisture on the floor, and obviously any small business owner concerned concerned about ultimately what that's going to mean. Cost of repair, replacement, and also shutdown time. So what did Neil do? Well, he had heard about him here on the show, so he called Complete Care Restoration, said they were on site in less than 24 hours, said the professionalism was unbelievable. Said Neil to us in an email, which we sure appreciated, it was very clear that this was a top shelf company. So take it from Neil. If disaster strikes, heaven forbid, don't forget Complete Care Restoration at CompleteCareRestoration.ca. Well, every Monday or the first episode of every week, courtesy of our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy, you can get a free solar quote today at KubiEnergy.ca. We present, this is essentially a look away from the news cycle for the most part, a way that we can renew our faith in humanity, a story that has simply made us smile. We call it Positive Reflections, presented by our friends at Kubi. And we love this story. This was a story from an audience member. This is from Brady, who's 11 years of age, and Brady and his family watch Positive Reflections on the show every single week together. And so, Brady, we're so grateful that you shared this with us. Check this out. This is from a zoo in China. Okay, and this is courtesy of SWNS. Brady, thank you for sharing the link with us. This is an elephant by the name of Shan Mai. And as you can see, a little kid at the zoo dropped their shoe into the elephant enclosure. What did Shan Mai do? Picked up the croc, picked up the shoe, and returned it to its original owner. Actually got it right. Got it to the correct kid, even. And as you can see, they were more than happy to reward Shan Mai with a little snack made available by the zoo. And then, of course, Shan Mai's trainers came out, much to the delight of everybody in attendance, and gave Shan Mai one of their favorite treats, which was a full watermelon. And so Shan Mai was rewarded for being so kind-hearted and so thoughtful. But how cool is that? The elephant sees the croc fall, picks it up, and returns it to the kid. This out of a zoo in China, courtesy of SWNS, and sent to us by Brady, 11 years old, who watches Positive Reflections on Real Talk every single week. Brady, with your parents, thank you for sending us an email. We got such a kick out of it. We absolutely loved it. If you've seen something, a random act of kindness, maybe somebody paid it forward, picked up your coffee in the lineup, whatever it was, send it in an email form to us. Talk@RyanJesperson.com. Make sure you put Positive Reflections in the subject line. It's presented each and every week by our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy. Coming up on the show, we're going to dig deeper into that renewables band tomorrow. Plus, I'm super excited to welcome back one of my favorite comedians. He's going to check in live from New York. You're going to have to tune in to find out who it is. That's coming up on our Tuesday episode of Real Talk on Wednesday. We're going to take a look at BC and about face in a provincial drug policy. How much of that has to do with the Fed's involvement? We're going to get to the bottom of it. In the meantime, thanks for supporting this show. Thanks for subscribing to our YouTube channel. And thanks for liking this episode. We'll see you again soon.
Real Talk is hosted by Ryan Jesperson. Executive producer, Josh Dunford. Technical producer, John Hicks. General manager, Katie Cook-Chivers. Account coordinator, Lawrence Derlego. Human resources, Lena Shepherd. Website design, Mike Johnston. Voiceover by me, Carrie Skelton. Real Talk's editorial board is Supriya Duvetti, Ahmed Ali, Randy Morin, Ann Castleman, Corey Hogan, Harmon Candola, Catherine O'Neill, and Chris Henderson. Member Emerita, Julie Rohr. Real Talk is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional and ancestral territory of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, and Nakota Sioux, home to the Métis settlements and the Métis Nation of Alberta. Real Talk is a Relay project. For more, check out RyanJesperson.com.